First up, we've got Ian Welch and Stuart Marshall. Stuart's going to be joining us via Skype, but Ian is here in the flesh. Ian's based at Victoria University, and his PhD examined the use of metadata protocols to allow enforcement of security policies on existing applications. And his research is in the area of digital preservation, and it's focused on how to keep games playable using emulators to provide access to those emulations. So without further ado, I should say something about Stuart, shouldn't I? That's a bit mean. Sorry, Stuart, if you can hear me. Stuart's a senior lecturer in the School of Engineering and Computer Sciences at Vic Uni. Hi, Stuart. He has a PhD in computer science on the topic of software reuse, and he's now the head of the Human Computer Interaction Group at Vic Uni. So thanks, guys. Take it away.
Okay. Cool. So, we've got a slightly random title. But what I'm going to talk about today is it's actually taken a whole lot of work that we've done over several years, putting it together and trying to give you an overview of our approach to looking at this problem of... Oh, great, sorry, I'm not used to microphones, so let's go. Okay, how does this work? I usually just shout. The problem here is about how to provide access to our code games, and there are a number of technical options, and I've tried to sketch them out here. I had a longer discussion of that at the Knowledge Exchange event thing. The options generally go from, we're going to use emulation. So let's say we're going to use emulation for a start. So the emulator provides a environment that apes is hopefully provides the same kind of environment that our programmer is expecting in terms of hardware support, operating support, and other libraries. So one approach is you just get people who want to access your archive games. They install an emulator, they download the game, they play it on their own computer. Now, it's not always that straightforward to do that. So part of the problem is the user must have perhaps admin rights to be able to run the game. They've got to be able to perhaps find the ROMs that they need to run it, yada, yada, yada. It's not the most straightforward thing to do. I mean, partially that problem has been addressed in recent years by people deciding that actually we've got these browsers that actually are general execution platforms, which is kind of awesome. And so you can actually download JavaScript, and perhaps in that JavaScript is embedded all the ROMs you need and stuff like that. And that's all very good. But we have steered away from that approach, or we've investigated an alternative approach, because we initially were quite worried about some of the IP issues. So we worked with Susan Corbett, who's on our project. She was on and played again in our previous NZtronics. And she really emphasized this issue around, we're providing game code directly to the person, letting them install on their computer, which may not be the best thing in all circumstances, especially if you're going to be providing access remotely. Other sort of problems are that even today, the JavaScript approach, you still got to deal with browser incompatibilities, basically. And different implementations of different emulators have different incompatibilities, basically, which will limit your portability. And then there's the other thing, which is it's hard to guarantee responsiveness. That's what I mean by performance here, because you're very sensitive to platform differences, like the power of your processor, basically. The particular JavaScript implementation in your particular browser, like Firefox versus Chrome versus your favorite flavor of Internet Explorer, for instance, if you have to use that. And again, that limits portability. So what we've been investigating for a while now, and other people are doing this too, we're not alone in this, is providing remote access to emulators that are hosted on a central machine. So the idea is that you have a bank of servers. You basically have virtual machines that run on there, they run the emulator, and then all the client does is they have a very simple application, lightweight application, so the performance helps performance, that is installed on their machine in front of them, or perhaps running on their mobile phone. And again, more recently, we've taken advantage of the fact that we have these browsers, which are essentially execution platforms. So our idea is to provide access through a browser to a game that's running remotely. And so the code never gets transferred over the network. You do have access to the artwork, of course, which is another issue maybe, but at least the program code itself is not transferred. That's the basic idea behind it. So, oh, it's gone a bit weird, but that's okay. We've run a number of student projects, master's, honours projects, where we've experimented with different designs for a platform for finding access and different protocols. And we've also looked into some of the responsiveness requirements, like at what point does a casual user get really annoyed at using your remote system and decide they don't want to play a game after all? I'll come back to this in a minute. So we generally apply user-centered methodologies, which is about understanding the user motivations, their goals, and so forth, and using this to derive tasks and requirements is the idea. And in an ideal world, we start with the sort of research thing, which is about requirements gathering and looking at other requirements beyond just the user. Then we design something, then we actually test it by prototyping it, and then we validate it in some sense, and I'll talk about that in a minute. And then we iterate. Okay. Now, normally in a long-running project, you'd have the same group of people doing this. One of the issues we've had is that every year we have a different student, so it's not quite as virtuous as this perhaps look or straightforward, but it's generally a good idea, built on previous knowledge kind of stuff. Okay. So we've run a number of projects, and generally we've chosen a context which is looking at, it's gone kind of nasty, focusing on use cases where we are dealing with people who are perhaps interested as casual gamers, more or less. So in the lower left-hand quadrant there. Rather than researchers, perhaps we can, in the context, we have the state library there, getting a book out, researching it, or as opposed to perhaps archaeologists or media studies people or so forth. Okay. So this has informed a lot of our research in this area. The other thing, of course, is that we've had taken case system requirements. So the things I just talked about, our ideal system has zero installation, makes use of stuff already on your phone or your device in front of you. We would like to reuse existing code as much as possible. Reuse is always good. And we provide this software and copying cross-platform. So this has informed our choice to focus on using a browser, HTML, JavaScript for remote viewer and running the system locally. Now, just going back to our users, one of the things about our studies is that typically we've gone with the users that we have direct access to, which are students, generally. So this is also partially why we're focused on, I think, probably gamers, in a sense, because we have done things like we've contacted our students, usually a snowball type approach, which is basically involves Facebook or something like that, and starting off with a small group of informants and then getting them to recruit other informants for us, which can be a useful way to get people. We've then done things like use questionnaires, written questionnaires, online questionnaires, to find out stuff like what platforms do they have access to, are they experienced with games, what's their demographics, and so forth. I think the most recent one, we had 94 respondents. The age range was 18 to 25. We had a split of 40% male and 60% female game players, of whom most had Android phones, which is interesting, smartphones. At about 42%, but then closely followed by iPhones at about 36%, and then others, basically. But there's certainly a high proportion of people owning smartphones, which is interesting. And also, in terms of what's running on their smartphone, typically people, these 94 people, I think almost all of them, who had smartphones of some sort, were not using the default browser. They would install Google Chrome and use that, which is interesting. And that 3/4 of them also play games on their mobile devices. That's actually, they're very used to casual gaming on that particular platform, which is kind of interesting. Okay. Now, as part of the process, we typically use some sort of persona-based thing. So basically, we create stereotypes of the users, which is supposed to help us elicit requirements. So here we have, from one of the studies, we have our competitive game player, our megalomaniac casual game player. I don't know if anyone recognizes this film. Does anybody recognize this film? It's points to you. I don't have any sweets, though. What is the film? Okay. Yes, a classic film. But anyway, casual game player, and then we have our administrator in this one. In other studies, we've had a wider range of people. Now, from these studies, we've elicited a slightly wider range of requirements than we initially started, which was basically somebody wants to come along and plays a game. And so we've found a need, and we've implemented one of our systems to add extra metadata around the context of playing the game. So there was a discussion yesterday about how people learn to play games nowadays, and reading the manual is not perhaps what they want to do. So we have a requirement to add gameplay hints, Easter egg information, cheats, and so forth. But also, some of the respondents indicated their interest in collaborative playing. So we got to view other people who are playing a game, perhaps to learn it as well. And so we wanted to have support for remote gameplay exports. So somebody can log into our system and watch somebody else who's currently playing. Persistent gaming, especially with the mobile phone access, you want to be able to pause execution and come back to it at a later point, basically. And then related to that, there's the idea of recording gameplay, and of course that could go and be cached with the metadata and so forth. So our systems typically have had some sort of back end here where you have a database where you store session information and so forth. Okay. The other kind of part of a research phase, a big key thing is what I mentioned earlier, is responsiveness. Now, people have done, particularly around 2006 through 2010, studies on network gaming and what are the requirements there for people and for different types of games. And the literature basically starts out saying that 50 milliseconds is not noticeable. It's like being in front of the game itself. And then you sort of go up. And basically it depends on the game, what you're willing to put up with. Now, we ran some of these experiments. So this diagram here is from a master's thesis of Vipul Dawadia. And in that context, we built a little remote viewer that ran on a mobile phone. Now, this is a little bit old. So it was a Nokia, I think that was an N95. So this is quite a while ago. And it allowed access to a remote server where a game was played. And we experimented with artificially introducing delay. And we found that for certainly first-person shooter and games like Asteroid and so forth, that 150 milliseconds, I always get these mixed up, milliseconds was kind of upper bound. So in all our further implementations, that's kind of our upper range. Beyond that, we don't think the game is actually usable, will alienate the casual gamers and so forth. That's kind of the notion. Okay. Taking these requirements, and we come up with some architecture, and this architecture here is from one of our systems which was providing access to PC games, okay? And in this particular one, we have a web client, and the web client is only just capturing through JavaScript mouse movements, it's capturing key presses and so forth, sending those over to a HTTP server that then hands it off to an application server. The application server will spawn virtual machines on demand, which will run the emulator within them, and then it will basically apply those inputs and then send back, in this case, just as a JPEG, the image. And it worked, actually, surprisingly well. Over time, we've experimented with different protocols, and we're now tending towards using a standard protocol called VNC, which is also used by the guys working on Keep and other projects have built a system called Emulation and Service that also uses this. VNC is what we're tending to now because it's a standard protocol with lots of people building clients for it so we can reuse the code. But this project was a good concept. Then we've done a lot of stuff on basically user interface. So this is user interface from the PC emulation game. And basically you can see we listed the games that were accessed and we tested all these with dubious IP rules in place on things. And basically the user task maps to the UI features, just kind of standard kind of stuff. Then we go through some validation. So normally the validation processes we go to are portability. So in this case, you know, is it supported? And for this one, we actually did implement it. So we could access it on mobile phones, but we student didn't have time to implement the UI side of it. So you could watch the games, which is fantastic, but you can actually play them. But that should theoretically be easy enough to add in. But we certainly had it was very portable for many other systems, primarily because we stuck with very, very, very basic web browser standards. And that's really what you need if you're going to implement something like this to make it work well. We also did some performance testing to see whether we meet our responsiveness criteria. This was all done on a local area network, which we assume was perhaps the main use case. And it was a fairly basic evaluation, but we compared two adventure games, one using mouse inputs, so Monkey Island, then we had Prince of Persia, which is a text input as well, I believe, and then, of course, Doom, which is always fun to play. And then we computed average frame rates, and we ran this many times, and it performed really well, actually. We had 50 milliseconds responsiveness, which was actually very, very usable, which is kind of cool. We've actually, I mentioned that we've moved away from this particular protocol for client-server communication, and now we're looking at VNC. I had another student last year, the year before, run some performance tests on that protocol, and we've also found that that works quite well. Now, one thing to mention here is that this initial implementation for the PC games didn't have sound, whereas we've now expanded to have sound using sound streaming, and you get 80 milliseconds, which isn't too bad. That's on a local area network and so forth. We'd like to do more performance work in that area. Okay. Then the other type of evaluation that we do typically is we'd love to do a large-scale user evaluation where you recruit people and you have human ethics and all these yada yada. These typically are done as student projects, so typically they get towards the end of the project and realize that, A, I've actually started running out of time. So we tend to use heuristic evaluation, which is basically applying usability criteria to at least guide us as to areas that we can improve things. So checklist, in effect. But you get a group of experts together, they evaluate the interface, and then we use that to inform further design as a basic kind of idea. Okay. Now, in ideal world, we'll take all that stuff and we iterate, and we have, actually, over several projects, and we'll put some links up to the papers and the reports that the students have done. And for the next iteration, we're actually thinking of taking what we've learned and considering some aspects. And some stuff that's come out of the meetings here and listening to people about different ways that people want to use these systems. What would be really nice is to actually have access to a group of not just our local university students, but some people in institutions, and actually do this persona thing again to identify different use cases, different scenarios and stuff. And I think that would be very useful for understanding the problem a bit more and designing a good wrapper around our service. The other thing is that if we believe IP is not a problem, then we also think there's a role for a dual speed approach. When using remote emulation is particularly where perhaps you are the researcher or the archivist and you're wanting more faithful emulation, so you want to be able to run a set of different tools remotely. But combine that with JavaScript emulators for access for very, very casual gamers. And then adopt off-the-shelf systems. So we're intending to make use more and more of stuff that people have already written and focus more upon the aspects of understanding requirements and eliciting those and building a system for that, and also looking at the performance evaluation side of things and suitability. So that's kind of where we're going with it. Cool. That's it. Thank you.